This is podcast number 27 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I'm sharing thoughts on inspiring versus requiring. Sorry I've taken a break for a few weeks. I've had some things that needed tending to. I think you know how that goes. But I've had a lot on my mind and that I'm going to try to start sharing over the next few days. Today I wanted to address a question that came up in the Facebook group. I had posted a wonderful article written by Jenny Phillips on what has happened to education in America. One of the moms in the Well-Educated Heart group wrote this comment, quote, "This article mentions that a love of learning can still be fostered while at the same time requiring our children to do assignments they don't want to do, using curriculum in a structured way. I know I have heard you speak and have emphasized that since learning cannot be forced, we should not require that our children do notebooking, assignments, reading, etc., if they aren't interested. Is it only if they are resistant? What about if they are just blah and will do it if I insist without resistance? Can you elaborate on these seemingly opposing thoughts for me? I'm currently in conflict over this particular aspect of school. In my years of home educating my children, I have tried inspiring, I have tried requiring, and neither one has been successful. Trying to figure out if one of these philosophies is inherently flawed or just my application of it. Perhaps I need a combination. I need to firmly know my approach going forward so we can move along with confidence. So it's on my mind a lot lately, and her words in this article jumped out at me." Close quote. I believe many of you may be trying to work through this same issue, so let me elaborate my point of view as you find the right answers for yourselves. The first question I would ask, though, is, when you say that neither method has been successful, how are you defining success? Is it reflected in test scores? Is it in engagement level? Are you afraid your kids just aren't doing enough? If success is to be determined by grade level expectations and test scores, then you may be on a different path than the Well-Educated Heart path may lead you. Also, while I understand the desire to firmly know your approach going forward, you may have to continue to experiment before you have the confidence that you're on the right path for you. I would never want you or anyone to just accept what I say because I say it. I'm still trying to figure these things out for myself. I don't agree that one of the philosophies must be inherently flawed. I just think the two philosophies serve different purposes. The philosophy of require and compulsion has served masses of school students at a level of functionality for quite a while. We generally have a population that can read and write at a functional level and can hold down jobs. Most of us went through a system of structured curriculum, and we might say that we're doing just fine. So why topple the system? In Jenny's defense, although I don't embrace the philosophy to force a child to do something he doesn't want to do, I don't think she's wrong to do what she's doing. I've heard her say that she felt inspired to do what she's doing, and I believe her. The reach of her influence is phenomenal. I think I read that she's reached over 350,000 students around the world, and that's in just a matter of a couple of years. But I see her as a bridge, not a final destination. She is connecting to a system that is familiar and comfortable, going to where people are right now, and lifting them to a higher level by adding a layer of the good and the beautiful. Woven into the curriculum are the older stories and beautiful fine art that are filled with values and truths. I believe it is the warmth of these resources that is touching and awakening hearts and is the true secret of her success. Our souls are famished, and she is feeding them. If you took those parts out of her materials, it would be just another academic exercise and would lose the light and life of what she's accomplishing. At least that's my opinion. Force and compulsion have always had to be used to get kids to do academic exercises when the heart has not first been opened and warmed. When you step back and look at the whole, though, what is this system of standardized curriculum and compulsory means costing us? Like Jenny wrote, 42% of our college graduates will never pick up another book after graduation and read for pleasure. Where are our Michelangelos and our Shakespeares? Where are our great leaders? Where are our great writers? How is this vast knowledge being used? Is our world growing lighter or darker? Although force may get some results, I don't believe a child will ever rise to the height of his full potential that way. His will must be engaged for that to happen, and a will can never be forced. The art of sparking desire, of awakening the will, is what we're trying to learn at the Well-Educated Heart, so that you don't have to resort to force. It's not about doing nothing and hoping everything will just work out. It's about creating a proper learning environment. You are using example and story and music and experience to feed desire and open hearts. Your love for learning is an actual energy that is transferred from your heart to your child's. And plus, what learning is so urgent that we feel we have to force it? Where to place a comma in a sentence? The difference between a vertebrate and an invertebrate? There's a big difference between being able to decode the word love and understanding the layers of its meaning. Decoding is the easy part, but that's where most of the attention is focused. And when we put the outer wrappings on first, we tend to shut down the inner learning. It's causing us, I think, to have a generation that takes the literal meaning of all things and cannot see or understand the underlying lessons. There's a big difference between constructing a sentence and having a sentence worth constructing. What doth it profit a child if he can write a 5-paragraph essay, but he has no love or reverence for life? In a 1920 book I just finished on the power of music in our lives, in addressing how to teach music to children, the author wrote, quote, "Many a person's real love for music has been blighted by having first been given the outer form, just as the real consciousness of God is often spoiled by the outward form of learning the prayer book by heart. All studies should be based upon this law, from within, out." Closed quote. That's the danger of our standardized curriculum. It goes from without and rarely makes it in. It allows for little to no individuality. It asks not what a child is interested in. It causes a child to rely on someone else to structure his learning, never awakening the tools for learning that are divinely gifted each child, hence the reason for needing to resort to compulsion. More from the book, quote, "In the old method, it was necessary for the pupil to depend eternally upon the teacher, so in most cases he grew bored and ceased to play at all. No one can remain really interested in a subject for any length of time unless there is a possibility of getting something to work out alone," close quote. I'm watching this in the life of a little 9-year-old boy I know. He happens to be my grandson. He's been diagnosed as being on the autism spectrum. In first grade, he couldn't handle the pace and would often yell out to the teacher to slow down. His inability to control himself caused him to be the victim of bullying by other first graders, yes, 6-year-olds, who would taunt him and set him up so that he would get in trouble. He came home in tears every single day. His mother wisely brought him home, although she got the usual looks of disapproval from certain in-laws and associates who warned her that her son needed the socialization of school and would fall behind academically. Yet it was the socialization of school that was destroying him. For the next 2 years, he blossomed. She didn't follow any kind of structured curriculum. They lived right across the freeway from Thanksgiving Point Gardens, and they spent hours in the garden, museum, and farm. He devoured books. He'd take a stack of books into his bedroom and come out hours later, detailing all the things he had learned from them. His memory was astounding. He loved all things outer space and comprehended complex topics. He loved science. He had a harder time getting into fiction, but fell in love with a series of Unfortunate Events books. His mom was just happy he was reading. But then something happened. This sweet kid started developing kind of a snotty attitude. As they talked, he realized he was acting out what he was reading in the books, and he chose to quit reading them. Wow! His math skills were amazing. He could solve problems in his head at 7 that I was trying to wrap my mind around. He loved math. He loved puzzles and solving things and would devour books with problems to solve. And yet, the naysayers kept putting doubts and fears into my daughter's head. A few weeks ago, she was talking to another mom of an 8-year-old autistic boy who was attending a charter school not far from them, and she said he was thriving there. So my daughter took her son for a visit, and he was so excited he could hardly stand it. The thrill of being with other kids and the after-school space program and ballroom dancing and chess club and art and so many possibilities. They had an opening in the school, and a few days later, he started school again, and he loves it. But he started struggling academically, according to the system. Here was a kid who could devour a stack of books in one sitting and could tell you all about them and had an insatiable appetite to learn, and yet in school was not able to read a paragraph and write out the 5 comprehension questions designed to help a student learn to increase his reading comprehension, something he previously had no problem with. He's finally settling into the system, but last night his mom told me he no longer loves to read. Just 3 weeks is all it took. And he's starting to call out to the teacher to slow down again when he has to go at the same pace as the rest of the class. He was having to bring home his math assignments because they weren't getting done in the allotted time at school. But here's an example of his difficulty. He was given a story problem. 4,260 people attended 5 concerts. Approximately how many people attended each concert? He was stuck. He agonized over the answer. But when he finally talked it out, he said, "Mom, 4,000 divided by 5 is 800. 200 divided by 5 is 40. 60 divided by 5 is 12. Then he added those figures together in his head and came up with a correct answer of 852. "But Mom," he said, "the question says approximately. It's exact. 4,260 divided by 5 is exactly 852. I'm going to get the problem wrong." This is the problem with curriculum. It's unbending. It's one size fits all. It doesn't allow for individual styles of learning, and it tends to shut down the whole process. Here's another quote from the music book I just told you about. She's talking again about learning music, but I would say it applies to all subjects. Quote, "It is certain that they have it in them and will do so if we have patience coupled with the right attitude. Forcing is of no avail. It has to come through naturally, and the function of the teacher is to awaken, not to instruct. It is indeed better for children to grow up before they are given the old-fashioned teaching, if they are to have it at all. Some mothers have known this intuitively and have allowed their children to go without music lessons, rather than be given the kind of teaching which gives them a hate on music. For this reason, it is better not to have any lessons than to have mechanical, theoretical lessons. It is a kind of mentally blighting process." Close quote. Some kids will sail through the system, but many will leave it thinking they are stupid, and many of them will have to be forced all the way through. I happen to believe there's another path, a path less traveled. I believe Jenny is a bridge to that path. Like I said, starting where people are and introducing them to what it feels like to have their hearts warmed and opened through the abundant story, poetry, art, and music included in her program. The scripture that runs through my mind frequently is, "Straight is the gate and narrow the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it." Of what value is an education if it doesn't lead us to an abundant and joyful life? It's not that the gate and the path can't accommodate everyone. It's just that few will find it because it requires that they ask and seek and knock. There was a beautiful stained glass window in the front of the chapel in the church I went to when I was growing up. It depicted Jesus standing at a door and knocking, but there was no door handle on his side of the door. The door had to be opened from the other side. There's a lesson for us who are seeking His path of learning and also to our children in their learning process. For true learning to happen, we have to learn the art of awakening their wills and opening their hearts and desires. That is God's way, as I see it. I can find no evidence anywhere of His use of force. There are rewards and consequences, but He patiently stands and knocks and waits for the invitation. He never barges in unwelcome. Once we accept the invitation, the way becomes very structured and strict. The path is narrow, and He leads us by the hand. So it is with our children. Once their hearts are opened and the desire to learn is there, the way may become very structured and strict, but the pattern must be followed. Heart first, desire first. So here we are back to the problem. You said you have tried to inspire. I would suggest you keep learning the art of inspiring. I believe it to be a true principle. Here's an example of a learning technique our schools have abandoned: music. Another quote from the book. Quote, "After listening quietly and hearing inwardly, there comes an inner sense of harmony. The chaos of vagrant thoughts is calmed into repose. The mind is stilled to outside influences and becomes a reflector for the inner light, which comes only through stillness. Thoughts become positive, ideas are born, and one dares to dream of great accomplishments. And through the stillness comes the thought, I can and I will. Those things which seemed beyond reach come quite naturally within the realm of possibility. Faith in our own powers is built up when the chaotic thoughts of the outside world are stilled, and we believe in our own ability to do and to be what we will. Dreams and ideals which have been vague take on definite form, shaping themselves under the influence of that harmony which has been established through listening." Close quote. I am definitely promoting a path less traveled. It's a path on which travelers must depend upon and be partakers of a spiritual grace, where they are endowed with heavenly powers and light that organizes and orchestrates learning for the purpose of multiplying and replenishing the earth with the good, the beautiful, and the true. It is not a path that can be systematized or standardized for the masses. It is individual. It is heaven-directed, and it cannot be forced. A new way of learning isn't going to happen overnight. Our generation may only start making a shift, or maybe we'll only manage to keep our foot in the door so that it doesn't slam shut completely. But we can begin to lay a foundation for a better way going forward, a way that doesn't have to rely upon force and compulsion. It will require a new measure of success. God never worries about numbers. He can do amazing things with even a few, should only a few find this path less traveled. I love these words of Newell Dwight Harris. "Not all men are of equal value, not many Platos, only one, to whom a thousand lesser minds. Not all men are of equal value, not many Platos, only one, to whom a thousand lesser minds look up and learn and think. Not many Dantes, one, and a thousand poets tune their harps to his and repeat his notes. Not many Raphaels, one, and no second, but a thousand lesser artists looking up to him are lifted to his level. Happy that town blessed with a few great minds and a few great hearts. One such citizen will civilize an entire community." I think the question you have to ask yourself is if you want to stay on the path with the masses or take the risk and walk a path less traveled, a path few there be who find it. The path requires that you let go of how the world teaches, and it cannot be traveled by compulsion in any form. The parable of the sower warns of those things that will take you from the path. You may recognize some in your own journey. Sometimes the seed, the idea, falls on stony ground. The idea of a heart-based education is received with gladness, but because it has no root within, it endures but for a time. When affliction or persecution arises, they are immediately offended, as the parable says. One of the definitions of offended is to be wounded or disturbed. When family members or friends or school officials look at what you are doing and question it and fill you with fears and doubts, it's easy to be wounded and disturbed and can cause you to step away. Another problem is when the seed falls among the thorns or the cares of the world. There's just too much to do, too many demands on our time, sick babies, sick mommies, houses that need cleaning, food that needs cooking, not enough money, too many cares. And so we return to comfortable, well-worn paths. Or he says there is the deceitfulness of riches. What if my child never gets into a good college? What if he's never successful by the world standard? He's got to get a job. We've got to be practical here. Why the word deceitful? Because we're told money buys happiness, but it really doesn't. Or the parable says we're pulled into the lusts of other things, things we desire more, which choke the word and it becomes unfruitful. But when the idea, truth, falls on good ground, when it is heard and received and tended to and nurtured, it will bring forth fruit. And the fruit of this kind of learning is always the riches of eternity, increased joy, love, light, a more abundant life in this life and the life to come, all the riches that cannot be measured. As the Lord said, "Not as the world giveth, give I unto you." But don't take my word. Experiment and prove these things for yourself. But you must set the standard by which you will measure your success and decide what matters the most. As Goethe wrote, "Things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things which matter least." I probably haven't answered your question, but I hope I've given you some things to think about. For now, I want to close with the wisdom of Calvin Coolidge. Silent Cal, he was called. He was a man of few words, but when he spoke, he was profound. And these are the things I think matter the most and which are the focus of learning at the well-educated heart, none of which can be learned by compulsion. We do not need more intellectual power. We need more moral power. We do not need more knowledge. We need more character. We do not need more government. We need more religion. We do not need more of the things that are seen. We need more of the things that are unseen. It is on that side of life that it is desirable to put the emphasis at the present time. If that side is strengthened, the other side will take care of itself. It is that side which is the foundation of all else. If the foundation be firm, the superstructure will stand. Bye-bye. See you next time.